This episode is brought to you by Bento Box, a hospitality platform that empowers restaurants through their own website. During these uncertain times in the industry, Bento Box is supporting restaurants through online ordering and gift cards. Opening Soon listeners get 50% off setup fees at getbento.com/openingsoon. That's GETBENTO.com/openingsoon.
The worst week of my life. No good options. We need help. And hashtag too small to fail. These are some of the rallying cries we've heard from chef and restaurateurs across the nation this past week. We've optimistically dubbed this season as reopening soon, talking to chefs and restaurateurs impacted by the coronavirus crisis. We hope to get some advice, share some of the pain, and find hope for the future.
In the past week, business owners were left with two losing prospects: close and lay everyone off, or pivot to takeout and delivery, risking your health and that of your team. Since then, 7 million people working in hospitality have found themselves newly unemployed. One bright spot is coming together of the industry. Each city has activated groups so that their collective voices may be heard louder, and nonprofits such as the Lee Initiative are providing aid to those in need. So our first guest today is Nate Adler, the founder of Gertie, Williamsburg, Brooklyn, the delicious all-day cafe, beloved by the whole neighborhood. And Nate has also been faced with those two tough options, and I'll let him speak to what's happening now. So welcome back to the show. Nate was on previously, episode 13, and is a good friend, and we're just happy to hear your voice. So tell us what's going on right now.
Yeah, we're... happy to be back on, not the best of circumstances, of course, but happy to tell the story that we, of what we've been going through over the last month plus now. And I think the interesting thing about this crisis is that it changes moment to moment. And every time we've had to make a decision, we're reacting to the latest news. We're reacting to the latest thought process, you know, between myself and my business partner, Flip, and our families and our friends, and what is right and what is wrong. And my high school education at the Ethical Culture School has really come in handy. Way more than I ever thought. I think ethics is something that's on our mind on a daily basis right now. Should we be putting ourselves in harm's way to help other people? Is a restaurant a big enough part of a community to be open? Do we believe, whether or not the government says so, do we believe that we are an essential institution? And those questions start to pile up and pile up as we move forward into this crisis. And, you know, we've been operating sort of to the very last day of the government mandates, whether it was businesses needing to close their doors, their dining rooms, or being 50%. Capacity, which is the first one, then closing the dining rooms, being allowed to be open for takeout and delivery. And I think it got to a point last week, because we did that, where we were sort of like hanging on for dear life and saying, you know, is this really all worth it? And so we were already looking for ways, as Jenny knows, because we had discussed it, to get involved in the community, because I think right now it's the only win-win that exists for restaurants is to get funding, whether that's raising it themselves or finding a grant to utilize the space and utilize the ingredients and utilize the equipment and staff in a way that is for the greater good of the population, sort of opening ourselves up to be a soup kitchen of sorts. And we had been thinking about this already. We actually launched an initiative a week ago that we started a GoFundMe to serve hospital workers meals at the Woodhull Hospital in Bed-Stuy. And that was really successful because we were able to raise, you know, around $4,000, which allows us to employ a couple people for a few days to make food for the hospital. And it really is a win-win. We have to take incredible safety precautions, obviously, when we're delivering the food, and we are putting ourselves in harm's way, and we've made that decision to do so. But we feel as though that is the best way that we can be utilizing our time, our power, and our ability to influence change during a really difficult time.
Nate, have you been able to keep all of your staff by doing this, or are you still very limited in how many people you have? Because I think when I came in to pick up, I think our last meal in Brooklyn before we escaped to a more isolated place to wait this thing out and work, came and picked up our last meal in Brooklyn from you guys, and I apologize if when we saw you, I was a little bit out of sorts. It was a bit emotional as it was Jenny and I's anniversary. And
oh, no.
The idea of, like, picking up a to-go meal, even though it was amazing, thank you. And under such weird circumstances with our kids all prepared to basically evacuate the city was a little more than I could handle at the moment. But there was only a couple of you guys working. Were you able to hold on to people by doing the shifts?
Takeout and delivery shifts, the only people we were able to retain were our executive chef and sous chef, which, you know, is more than many others. And then, you know, Flip and myself, who were not taking a salary to be there, but to really be a, like, a sweet spot.
We lost you on the audio, Nate.
Oh, sorry. A friendly face in the community. And so, no, the business we were doing takeout and delivery was not robust enough to hire back any of our line employees. That being said, pivoting to the Lee initiative and what we're doing there, we got a grant that is allowing us to feed hospitality workers in the greater community, Brooklyn, New York community. And that is enough money that and enough work that we will be able to hire back some people to do that. So we're hiring back, I think, 4 back of house and 4 front of house.
That's awesome.
Jen, you want to tell us a little bit more about the Lee Initiative as background?
Yeah, so I mean, they've been on the show before, and typically what the Lee Initiative does is mentor people, women specifically, 6 mentees per class, and gives them leadership training and teaches them about running their own business and all sorts of awesome things. And they, during this crisis, in partnership with, I was just going to wait for the siren to pass. Okay, sorry. So they, in partnership with Maker's Mark, are activating 1 or 2 restaurants per city to feed hospitality workers out of work. So Nate and Gertie are one of them. So tell us where you are in the process of getting up and running with the Lee Initiative, Nate, and what you guys are planning to do.
Yeah, so we got the word on Friday that this was going to be potentially a reality for us, and so we started right away sort of mobilizing our troops, talking to our staff about where they've been, whether they've been exposed, because obviously there's a really delicate balance here between looking out for public safety and health and also giving people back their jobs. So unfortunately, the answer can't be, we're just going to hire everyone back, but we want to know exactly what they've been doing. Have they been quarantining? do they know anyone that's been exposed, and have they been exposed to them? And we have, you know, we've made direct orders to the four people that were working in the restaurant last week, that the only two places they could be are home and the restaurant. And that's going to be the same thing moving forward for anybody that wants to sign back on. So that was the first step, was sort of a vetting process there. We've identified those people. We've got them sort of rearing and ready to go for tomorrow to start prepping. And then we're launching on Thursday.
Wow. And so, and the grant covers both the cost of the staff and you are, is food being donated? How is that? How does that work?
Yeah, so it covers the cost of the staff and supplies. We're both giving out prepared meals, but also supplies like paper goods and like, you know, dry goods and things that they could cook at home, coffee, paper towels, like anything of that sort. So if you come and pick up, you'll be able to get a meal, but also take home a little bit of other necessities. And a lot of the work that we've been doing over the last 3 days has been talking to our friends in the industry and purveyors and see what they're willing to donate to us, because obviously the more that gets donated, the longer we can run the initiative for.
So basically you guys run the initiative until either supplies or funding runs out.
Yeah, correct.
And how's the word getting out to these hospitality workers that are on the ground and
yeah, I mean, a lot of it is social media, but then we've asked like anybody that we know in the industry to pass it on to their listservs. I have a good friend who's sort of like in the coronavirus task force at Union Square Hospitality. So she sent the information out to all of their employees. And I think just slowly but surely getting the word out through media as well, through press, I think is going to be very important. And yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it through word of mouth as well.
And how many people are you expecting to like feed a day or come through the doors every day?
So we don't exactly know how many people are going to come, but we are planning for 250 meals a day.
Wow.
And we are going to be doing it 4 days a week.
Okay.
And Olmsted is also going to be doing it. I don't know how many days a week they're going to be doing it, but we're trying to cover the whole week, essentially.
Between the two locations.
Yeah, but it's just like a lot is up in the air because of the funding, right? So
right.
We're sort of like, we'll take it a week at a time. We plan to move forward with it for as long as we possibly can.
Amazing. And are you guys still going to be doing your like takeout and delivery program or trying to serve meals to the hospitals as well in the interim, or are you just focusing on this?
We still have a lot of money left to feed hospital workers right now. So we're going to be doing like two or three more drops to them. And we plan to be open to the public on Saturdays just for pickup. I don't feel comfortable anymore, sort of supporting the delivery infrastructure in New York City. I don't feel like they're taking it seriously enough.
The delivery drivers themselves?
Yeah. Tell us more about that.
I think that, specifically, and I'm happy to be outspoken about it, that Caviar has done a really bad job. With their, both their sort of, their priorities in this whole thing, but also in their, safety, requirements for their drivers, over the course of the last week, like their drivers just didn't seem to understand that we were in a public health crisis. And the idea of taking the same commissions from local mom and pop restaurants that are only doing this to survive, I think is incredibly
selfish.
Yeah. Incredibly selfish. And like,
I'll throw it out there for you.
Yeah. If you look, you know, Instagram obviously is like a huge wealth of information right now. It's like their sponsored advertisements don't even talk about coronavirus at all. It's like, we have healthy options for takeout and delivery, you know? And it's like happy people like manicured around a table in a professional photo shoot. And it's like, what are you saying about like the safety standards that you're putting in place? And why are you giving zero delivery fees to the customer when the restaurant is really what needs the relief right now?
100%.
So even like in this public health crisis, like our commission didn't go down at all. And it was, I think it's like 23% of sales.
Ugh.
So like talk about just eroding any ability to onboard, like re-onboard, bring back in our employees to the mix. It makes it impossible. So.
And what about and they weren't like training their staff on how to be more careful and safe with when they were delivering their drivers?
It seemed that way. In fact, on Saturday, I like actually yelled at a couple of the drivers and I was like, you guys aren't taking this seriously. Like, wear your gloves, wear your masks. Like, why are you trying to come into the restaurant? We've like completely sealed the restaurant from outside people. You need to stay 6 feet apart. And one of them started laughing at me and I was like, what are you laughing about? Like, do you not understand the seriousness of the situation? It's not just like it's not their fault necessarily, right? It's the company that they've been hired by. And we're putting all of those people in harm's way without them knowing it necessarily. And, you know, to them, it's making a paycheck versus not having a job, right? So, of course, you're going to probably take the paycheck in that situation.
I'll say it's hard, too, because I feel like, you know, in better times, or especially in these times, the accountability always ends up falling on the restaurant, not on the middleman, essentially the driver or whatnot, which is tough. And then there are challenges. I think the broader challenges that day to day, the media, the government, like there are mixed messages out there. It's hard to know what we've got medical professionals telling us that we shouldn't be back together within proximity for 5 to 6 weeks, and we've got the leader of our country telling us to go back to work on Monday. So there's definitely some mixed messaging, and it depends on who people are listening to in this the new age of how we
receive information. Yeah, and I'm not saying that that it's easy, right? Like, I just think that just like in any other crisis in the history of at least since I've been alive, like it's up to private institutions a lot of the time to like help push us across the edge. And you can't expect that government is always going to make the right decision.
It goes back to how we started our conversation with the ethics and your responsibility. And that's really all you can do at the moment is, hold on to.
Yeah. I had a debate with my fiance who's quarantining in Connecticut, for the duration because she feels really uncomfortable being here. And I was like, am I doing the right thing by even offering these meals because we're bringing people out of their homes to pick them up? And is it more important to provide free food or is it more important to have everybody stay at home for 5 or 6 weeks and get this over with and be done with it and go back to normalcy? And I think that there's no easy answer there. And like her stance was, you're doing the right thing. And like, you have to take it day to day. You can't allow yourself to be consumed with things that you can't control. And the world that you're controlling is really doing, you know, doing a service to the community. So, you know,
it is a tough call.
Let's power on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it is a tough call, but ultimately people also do have to eat and grocery store shelves are going bare. And I think as long as you're doing things in a calculated way that is limiting risk and exposure to your team and to the people who do come out, then you are doing a service. I mean, I think, again, it's like calculated risk. And so in that sense, how are you guys, like, what have you done to prepare your team and to prepare to, like, hand out these meals to potentially 250 people a day to limit their risk and exposure?
Right. So the first thing, as I said before, was just vetting them. And, you know, before even saying we had a job for them, we talked to every individual and said, how are you doing? What have you been doing the last week? And are you okay? And, you know, what has been your protocol and whatnot? And then, like, after sort of vetting that, offering them the job to come back. Right. So that was the first step. The four of us have been, like, hermetically sealed in here for 10 days. So we don't really want to.
Do you have any employees that gave you answers that you weren't comfortable with?
Well, one of them had a vacation plan to Scotland and actually went on it. So
no.
He got back from the UK 2 days ago and he was like, I'm self-quarantining, so I'm not going to be able to do it. But otherwise, no, it's been, people have seemingly been pretty responsible. The other thing is that we're setting up like a barrier between the people picking up the food and ourselves of 6 feet, and just sort of laying the bags out on tables, so that we're not coming into contact with them. And we are also going to be putting tape or chalk or cones on the ground of some sort all the way down Grand Street to ensure that people waiting in line are going to be 6 feet apart as well.
Wow.
We're also going to be obviously, like, washing our hands and sanitizing. We are going to be doing a deep sanitization of the restaurant. We're actually calling in a deep cleaning company to come do that before we start. And I think, you know, that's above and beyond. Like, it's not cheap. It's going to be, even at like a 75% discount, it's going to be $1,000 to get somebody in here to do like a hospital style sanitization of the space. But it's going to make us feel a lot more comfortable. So I think it's worth it.
For sure. Well, you are doing, you know, something amazing for the community, and it sounds like you have really thought through, you know, everything and put into place a ton of necessary precautions and, you know, day by day, and, you know, we're here for you and we really appreciate you sharing everything with us, and keep up the good work. Awesome, bud. All right. Well, shout it out. So Thursday's the day people can start picking up meals. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
All right. We'll be sure to share it out as well. And, you know, thank you for all that you do. So welcome back. We are now going to chat with Greg Backstrom and Max Katzenberg from Olmsted and Mason Yaki. Max and Greg have also pivoted to assist with the Lee Initiative, and they are also helping make some noise with their New York Hospitality Coalition. So thank you both for being here during this time.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, thank you.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, I first saw you posting, I think, Greg, about this New York Hospitality Coalition. So tell us about that initiative.
Well, I mean, honestly, you know, last week, like many of us, we were forced to lay off our entire staff. So that was 60 plus people, some of which, you know, helped us open the restaurant. And now, you know, Max and I, like everyone else, we're trying to navigate through this disaster. And so we, you know, we thought that it was beneficial for all of us if we tried to have one voice and to make sure that, you know, the little guys don't get overlooked during this. You know, Max and I, with as terrible as all of this is, you know, we're hopeful that we'll reopen. The coalition is more about, you know, the Indian restaurant next to Olmsted. You know, how are they going to navigate through this? Do they know how to, you know, look at their policies, their insurance policy to see if they're covered under virus protection? You know, all this kind of minutia. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. So how are you, like, how have you gotten in touch with those restaurants and have, like, helped to support and share their voice?
Well, we started the coalition a week ago, Thursday, and we were really focused on the sales tax issue. It was something that was immediate and urgent. It was happening in 24 hours. Where the state was basically putting operators in the position of paying their tax or paying their employees. And what we really didn't want to have happen is have all the lists of this week, whereas the week before they were like, who's going on temporary closure? Who's going takeout delivery? We didn't want it to be, you know, who's bouncing payroll checks? That's where we saw it possibly going. So we started the coalition. We had a groundswelling of support. We had a really focused message of postponed sales tax penalty and interest, allow operators to pay later. And the governor the next day did that. And since then, it's really just been a snowball of operators coming to us, workforce coming to us saying, you know, how can we help? Let's come together. And now we're really going to be looking to create a resource, you know, create a service for our operators, for our workforce to weather this storm. And come through the other side as close to whole as possible.
Is that a goat in the background?
Yeah, it's my dog. I'm sorry. She sounds like Chewbacca. There will be a lot. Yeah, you might hear kids, dogs. It's like we're podcasting from home is a whole fucking new world. Anyways, yeah. So.
One of the things,
sure my
guys.
Dog, my dog will start barking soon, I'm sure.
Yeah. One of the things that I find interesting is that that there's never really been anything like this, these organizations to bring us together created before. It's like,
yeah,
you know,
that's exactly what we got. That's where exactly, you know, for us operators in New York, you know, it's more of an alliance in that, you know, everybody more or less gets along, you know, we're pretty much out for ourselves. You know, work well together when it's convenient for us, but we're all working 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 hours a week. There's just not a lot of time to really get together and organize. There's never time. So we're looking at this as an opportunity to really create a community of operators so that once we're through this, you know, for the very first time, we'll have a platform to come together, to communicate, to share ideas, find a consensus, a true operator consensus on the mandates that are always coming through the pipe, that are always really, really hurting businesses, it seems, almost every single time, and also have a voice to, you know, to make ourselves heard in that regard.
Yeah, I think it's really important what you guys have done, and, you know, as you see, you know, everybody knows that hospitality is big and employs a lot of people, and then it's not really until you see the stats and the numbers come through just how giant the industry is and how much power the industry could have if, given it's organized.
Yeah, I think one of the big differences is it's an enormous amount of jobs. It's an enormous percentage of the GDP. But these are low margin businesses. You know, we do not have lobbying budgets, whereas the airlines, it's a much smaller sector. The cruises, it's a much smaller sector, but it's big business, it's high margins, it's giant CEOs, it's millions of dollars of profit per business, and you know, they're organized in a way that we're not. And it's just so heartwarming to see all of these incredible nationally known operators coming together and leveraging every relationship that they have to make a difference in these stimulus packages, and you know, we want to do a very similar thing with this coalition, you know, every person needs to be leveraging everything that they have. If it's not financial, if it's not relationships, it's a voice. And if we can do that, then we have a fantastic chance to get this industry back to the vibrancy that made New York City what it is. It's going to take time, but you know, we know we have the people. So now we need to demand the support.
Right. Take us a little bit back to what you're on the ground doing now. Sales tax has been delayed, right? Yeah. That is a success.
Awesome.
What's been happened since then? What's next on the list?
Well, the whole thing has just been happening so fast. Sales tax happening in that way was remarkable. It was not us that did that alone. It was many, many, many people coming to the mat and making ourselves heard. But really, the governor, he was a no on Thursday, and then he was a yes Friday afternoon. It was remarkable. We're taking a little bit of time just to really get some infrastructure in place, and there are some really, really urgent initiatives that we need to be taking starting immediately. For us, our workforce is in extremely urgent need of relief. 250,000 people are going on to unemployment from the hospitality industry in New York City alone, almost a million people, 860 plus thousand in the state. And the maximum benefit in New York State, it's $504 a week. That's sub minimum wage. On 40 hours, it comes to $12.60. That's way less than the minimum wage in New York City. It's just not, it's not sustainable. It's not possible that people are going to be able to make ends meet on that. And our point is, this is not unemployment. You know, this is a stay at home order.
Mm-hmm.
Our industry shuttered.
Protect the city.
Exactly. Our industry shuttered to protect the city.
Right.
And we can't just be treated. Unemployment is the mechanism to get people cash the fastest way, right? It's our municipality's system to deliver cash. But this is not unemployment. It's not an unemployment benefit times. The state has to come to the table major, and that's really what we're going to be focusing going wide with next. Other things such as business interruption insurance, such as what's happening with rents, with payroll taxes, with the continuation of sales taxes. The stimulus will come from the federal government likely, and the relief needs to come from the state.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. We had Brittany Anderson from Richmond, Virginia on the show last week, and she was like, it's not unemployment, it's a social distancing wage, and that's how we should be looking at it. And, you know, I think that's a really, like, really great way to frame the conversation. So what is next in terms of the state? Because I will tell you, you know, it's not just hospitality that's impacted. Also, it's the entire ecosystem that supports hospitality.
Yeah, that's like the argument that is not being brought up in any of this.
Right.
Like, we laid off 60 people, right? So that's not just terrible for Max and I and those 60 people. Like, there's a dry cleaner across the street. There's a laundromat across the street. There's a place where everyone gets their nails done and a massage next door to that. There's the organic juice place. Like, those are 60 people that are not patroning those places. Half of those places are closed because of social distancing and COVID. And other ones are they're all at home. So like, how are those businesses are struggling? They're not, we switched to delivery only. We still have to lay off 80-90% of our staff, you know?
Right.
It's terrible.
Right. Not to mention the farmers and the paper suppliers and the people
that
pick up your trash every day. Like, it's just everyone is affected by it.
It's not just farmers and it's not just our purveyors. It's everyone.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so that is, it's, so how do we collectively, you know, tell this story and what is the next thing that you guys are going after? Is it like,
we want to pick really specific, achievable things. So we have ears in the governor's office, in the mayor's office. You know, we have contacts. We know what's on the table, what's not on the table. And the most urgent thing for us now is our people, is the workforce. So the huge thing we're going to be going after starting very soon is this unemployment benefit getting doubled.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is a huge thing, because again, it's also putting actual money into people's pockets where they can put that back into their local economy as much as they can while they're staying from home and actually, you know, supporting themselves. So I think that makes a ton of sense. And is that for like, is that specifically going to be for people who have been terminated because businesses were shuttered? Or is it like in general? Tell me like the specifics of that initiative.
I mean, for us, for the duration of the state of emergency, the unemployment benefit needs to be doubled. I mean, this is an all sector issue, the same that the sales tax was. I mean, for us, it was extremely urgent because of the cash flow of our businesses. But it wasn't just a sales tax postponement for hospitality businesses. It was for all businesses. And that's the same angle that we'll be taking. You know, we'll be taking our megaphone and be trumpeting it through the hospitality lens, that, you know, that's our base. But I don't think it can be a specific hospitality unemployment benefit thing. This is a statewide, city, you know, nationwide, worldwide pandemic crisis, and it has to be treated as such. Just putting people on a minimum wage, $504 a week, it's pre-tax, that money. So everyone gets a $504 check. Everybody's like, okay, I'm cool, I got $500. You know, in January, they're all going to get 1099s from the city and have a huge tax bill. It really comes more to like $250 or $260 that you're actually getting post-tax. It's not enough. It's just not even close to enough. You know, these people, before they can even have the mental capacity to go back out and spend money in the industry, you know, in the economy, they have to know that they can pay their rent. They have to know that they can feed their families. They have to know that they can pay their credit card bills, pay their student loans. I mean, none of that stuff is being suspended. Mm-hmm. None of it.
Right. I mean, the idea too with unemployment, it is that unemployment benefits are given to people with the assumption that they're going out and able to find another job.
Exactly.
And that's just not even possible right now. So you're asking people to stay home, not work, not look for a job, and then not giving them enough to be able to do that.
Yeah. To me, it always felt like that number was so low as kind of an incentive not to stay on it. Right. It was like, right. You could get away with this for like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, but like you have to work. Nobody can just live in New York City. I mean, this is such an astronomically expensive place. $300 a week. It's almost impossible. Right. So, the fact that we're going to take all of our people, I mean, people who make $150,000 in this city live paycheck to paycheck. You know, a very good manager salary is 70 to 80,000, maybe 90,000. You know, entry manager salary is 58,500 in New York City now. You know, servers, they can make, you know, 50 to 70 range. Cooks can make 40 to 50 range. I mean, many, 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 many of these people are paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, they're all staring personal financial crisis right in the eye if this doesn't get turned around quickly.
And not to
how do you?
Go ahead, Al.
I was going to say, how do you want people that are listening to this and that are receiving the message to help in making this happen?
I mean, the best way that can help is to be informed. And that is like, you know, why we formed this coalition. You know, now we have legal counsel and HR counsel to help with sort of the more specific stuff. And we're just trying to, you know, not just, you know, set up a fund or set up you know, petitions. We're trying to give people the tools to be able to navigate through this.
Yeah. You know, so we hope that people, exactly. We hope people will, you know, follow us on Instagram, subscribe, and sign up for the coalition. And we're going to be giving very, very specific, absorbable resources for our operators and workforce. And we're also going to be giving very specific and actionable items behind these groundswells. In the form of graphics, assets, content to post, and specific things to do to get these representatives' attention and really compel them to act.
Well, it's awesome, and I appreciate you guys doing this and putting out the content and getting people involved. And tell me a little bit about like the mechanics. Are you meeting with other operators to sort of go through this and then push it out to their base? How are you like getting people into your funnel?
Greg and I are working more now than we were before the restaurant.
we have a call tonight with all of the other coalitions that popped up around the country. I mean, with LA and San Francisco and Philly and DC and Buffalo, I mean, Chicago really helped, you know, laid the groundwork for, you know, unifying their voice very, very quickly. So in some ways we're sort of just sort of, you know, following suit, but, yeah, I mean, it's been really amazing. I mean, again, like Max said, this only started on Thursday, and we've already had three conference calls from all the other coalitions around the country.
Yeah, operators are reaching out to us like crazy. You know, we're on the phones all days, and we're just getting organized. We're laying the groundwork. You know, we use a few, you know, obviously Instagram as a message, as a tool to communicate quickly, but, you know, we're able to, through the subscription process, really compartmentalize who is who and what people are comfortable doing. And we're able to, activate operators in one way. We're able to activate workforce in another way. We're able to activate our guests in another way. So we're really excited as this continues to grow to be able to message and not support these individual sectors and also message with them really accurately and really in a really compelling way.
Yeah, I mean, I think for all the crisis that's happening, there's definitely some bright spots. And I would say that this is certainly one of them, just bringing everybody together, sharing such great lessons and really, you know, putting people to task. So thank you for doing that. Definitely keep sharing with us. We'll push out to the Tillit newsletter and use our platforms to, you know, share the messaging as well. So let us thank know you. What we can do to support there. And yeah.
Can we talk about the food bank a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Say. We just had Nate Adler on also
for the food bank.
Yes. We did talk to Nate about the Lee Initiative as well, but the food bank is also fucking awesome. And I love Ed and Lindsay and what they do. So tell us, you guys are also participating in Lee Initiative. So let's talk about that a little bit too.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting how it, you know, the goal is for us to do it as many days a week as possible. I mean, if we could do it 7 days a week, we will. And we'll just, you know, we're trying to reach at least 250 people a day. But honestly, just sort of the information that keeps coming as far as social distancing and, you know, keeping our own volunteers and our own employees safe, you know, we're still going back day by day of like, you know, is it better to go only a couple times a week and give out more and try to do more people in those fewer days. But right now we're going to start off by, you know, trying to do a couple hundred people and just give them a little bit of prepared food, some toiletries, some ingredients to bring back home and cook for their next meal, and take it day by day.
Yeah. So when are you planning to start serving people?
Thursday.
So Thursday will be the first day. And basically you'll run the initiative for as long as you possibly can. And it's open to anybody in the hospitality industry.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to turn anyone away just because if they're not in the industry, that, you know, everyone needs help. But that's the goal, is to, you know, feed our community.
And how, our community. And tell me about like bringing back the team. Are you able to rehire some of your staff that you had to let go?
Yeah, I mean that's a big part of why we're doing this. But again, like this is such a complicated and unique situation because we also don't want to force or make people feel obligated to get on a train for 45 minutes either. So it's going to be a mix of people that can, you know, people that work for us that are going to be able to walk to work. And then honestly, some of them are just cooks from other restaurants in the area that were laid off and they have free time and they want to walk over and help.
It's awesome. I think there's like six or seven cities now that have been activated as part of this initiative.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing some really good work. All right. Well, we'll share the word on that too, that people can come and start picking up food, as of this Thursday. And you're going to start with 4 days a week or you're going to go full seven to start?
We're going to start with I kind of think again, like we have, you know, things keep changing, but we're going to start with Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and then kind of, you know, this like arbitrary first 15 days that Trump started, you know, ends on Sunday, Monday. So we kind of have to see, you know, is there going to be you know, further restrictions. You know, we have to be willing to adjust every day for the safety of the people coming in line and the staff and volunteers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most interesting thing about this crisis is like it literally changes hour by hour. So it's just like, yeah. I get an anxiety attack every time my phone dings. It's like a New York Times alert. It's like, how do you stay on top of everything?
I have a huge exhale right before I, there's David Cross walking past the restaurant. Every time I wake up and look at my phone.
Yeah, for sure. All right, guys, well, stay safe out there. Thank you for everything that you are doing to support and let us know how we can be additional resources.
Guys, tell us before you sign off where, tell us the website and the Instagram handles.
Maximus.
NewYorkHospitalityCoalition.com. New York Hosp Coalition. Do I have it right there? Let's do that again.
Yeah, don't worry.
Our website is NewYorkHospitalityCoalition.com. Our Instagram handle is NYHOSP Coalition, New York Hosp Coalition. Please follow us. Please subscribe. And thank you.
Cool. Thank you, guys. I know there's a lot to do in the moment. And like Jenny said, that everything, and you guys said, everything changes day by day. But I do, I really hope that y'all are able to continue this on the other side of this crisis so that this kind of thing is established and ready to go for when people need it next time.
Same to you guys.
Totally. Thank you so much.
This episode is brought to you by Bento Box. Bento Box empowers restaurants to own their presence, profits, and relationships directly through their own website. Restaurants are currently having to make significant changes to their operations, and Bento Box is setting up gift card processing and online ordering stores in as little as 4 days to support restaurants during this challenging time. With Bento Box, you can drive revenue and keep your guests up to date. Opening Soon listeners get 50% off setup fees at getbento.com/openingsoon. That's GETBENTO.com/openingsoon. Well, Camilla, we're so happy to have you back on the show, founder of Westbourne. And I want to talk today about Roar, which, your call for relief opportunity for all restaurants, which is amazing. So tell us about what you guys are up to.
Yeah. So Roar was created last week in a results response effort across the city, across a bunch of different restaurant owners and chefs, big, small, everything in between, multi-unit, single operators. We formed pretty quickly. We had an email out last Wednesday and 30 owners and chefs on the phone by 6 p.m. that night, and our petition on change.org went up the next day. We're essentially focused at the state level. Really twofold is our mission. First and foremost is how can we take care of our workers? The vast majority of restaurants have closed as a result of COVID-19. Most have conducted mass layoffs, which means millions across the country are out of jobs. And also remembering that these are positions where you can't work from home, you can't make an income from home. And considering the economic fallout of the pandemic, obviously, there's not other people hiring, to be able to work from home in that way. So there's really not a lot of options when you're out of work in our business right now. And it's massive. There's so many people who need our help and need relief. So first and foremost, it's focusing on, how can we provide an income replacement program? Right now, unemployment insurance only cover, when you go and get unemployment benefits, it only covers a fraction of your income. But if you're a minimum wage or around there employee, obviously getting only a fraction of that is not livable. I mean, by the very nature of it. So it's really an intensely difficult position and time right now for our people. And then on the flip side, we're working really hard. Again, we're focused on the state level. New York City Hospitality Alliance is focused on the New York City level. In tandem, we're also working with the Independent Restaurant Coalition, IRC, which is focused on the federal level. So they're working right now in DC, obviously, on the latest relief bill. And we're working directly with Governor Cuomo's office. And, you know, the second side of this is solvency. So first and foremost, obviously relief for our teams in the immediate who don't have jobs. And like I said, I have no other way to make a living right now. And the flip side is, how do we make sure that as many restaurants can reopen after this, you know, when we're on the other side of it, getting as many to be able to reopen as possible so that we can provide jobs again for our teams. So again, it's all about our people. And, you know, we're focused on both advocacy and these relief efforts. Hopefully this week we'll be able to announce. We've been working very hard with the Robin Hood Foundation to try and figure out how we can find a structured relief fund that we can then launch a capital campaign for, again, to provide financial relief for those that are were laid off and furloughed as a result of the pandemic.
So are you guys really looking for to create a relief fund that would be contributed to by like the greater public, or are you like lobbying? Okay.
I mean, both. Cool. I mean, so again, our advocacy work is focused on structured government relief and aid, but I don't think that we can do that. You know, both have to come together. And really, you know, that element of the relief fund came out of, you know, we're obviously supportive of every restaurant, every community helping themselves and doing what they can. There's obviously, you know, a plethora of GoFundMe pages, but, you know, for example, in New York, there's a lot of charitable individuals and foundations who want to help in this scenario and see what's happening, but they're not, you know, their charters won't allow them to donate to a private for-profit business, right? So we need to be able to provide a larger vehicle that will be able to capture, you know, like I said, there are a lot of people. We've had a ton of incoming and overflowing support for wanting to help. But right now there's just not that vehicle just yet.
So the first step basically is to create a nonprofit fund, essentially, that could be this vehicle to distribute funds to people who are like have this social, like essentially a social impact, a social distancing wage is, I think, like the way that people are framing the conversation.
We're actually looking to identify an existing nonprofit that we can then earmark for.
Got it.
Because ultimately, again, there are some groups that are creating their own, but, you know, you really handing income to individuals directly, there's very few organizations across the country that have done it or do it. You know, Robin Hood obviously facilitated one for 9/11 and for the victims of 9/11. And, you know, it's intense. There's an immense administrative component of that, as you can imagine. And, you know, more than anything, you want to make sure that these funds are distributed responsibly and ethically. So it's a big undertaking. And like I said, you're talking about millions of people across the country and, you know, hundreds of thousands here in New York for what seems to be potentially an extended period of time. You know, we personally at Roar feel that it's better off rather than creating one and you know, for lack of a better word, winging it, better to really locate an organization that, you know, ourselves and Robin Hood could then funnel through who have the expertise in administering something of this nature. It's complicated.
Yeah, it is hard. No, it's super complicated. And I think, you know, we had a conversation with with somebody that we've worked with in the past last week. And, you know, we were like, we want to do something to give to the workers. And they're like, you know, it's really hard to get money into the funnel. It's really hard to get money out of the funnel to the right place and do it responsibly, which is very true. And I think those are like really big distinctions. You know, that's like, it's smart to do it that way. And also like the need is so immediate. So like you have to be able to do this like now, you know, to be able to help people. It's like, there's people who can't pay their rent this month and right now. Okay. And so tell me a little bit about, you mentioned also you're in contact with Governor Cuomo's office and, you're working on that angle as well. What are some of the initiatives for the workers look like there?
So it's multi-pronged. If you go to our change.org page, you can see our point plan. We've aligned it, as I said, with both the New York Hospitality Alliance on the city level, as well as the IRC on the national level. You know, first and foremost is an income replacement program. Like I said, unemployment benefits, you know, if you're a laid off banker, for example, getting 50% of your income is livable, even in New York City, you know, when you're a minimum wage employee, 50% of that is by definition not livable. So we have a gap to fill when it comes to income for our teams. We have to think through rent abatement. So we're really trying to push for a more a more reasonable treatment. You know, right now, all these businesses are closed. There's no sales to be had. Yes, I know some are doing pickup and delivery. I have a whole, you know, I don't feel that that's in the public interest without proper testing. To me, that level of operation is still not safe, especially in a high density city like New York City, given where we are in the curve and the pandemic. But, you know, so you have this no sales mandated, you know, limitation on sales, even if you're doing delivery and pickup only. But you're still incurring all the same expenses while also trying to support your teams through this period. You know, it's an impossible equation. So first is, you know, rent abatement and support with mortgage forgiveness for landlords. You know, sales and payroll tax and deferral of utility payments until reopening. You know, there's a lot of those, again, things that are outflows that are almost impossible when you're talking about a frozen business. There's a lot of things that we're trying to work on with the SLA, things like license renewals. Right now, the SLA is shut down. So what do you do if you can't get a license renewal? There's a lot of structural improvements, I think, when it comes to on-premise sales allowances that have put in place that, you know, we're advocating should maintain. There's an issue with business loss insurance coverage. There's a lot of ambiguous language as to whether this should be covered or not. And that's something that the governor certainly has the ability to, you know, to mandate be covered. Things like the WARN Act and a lot of, you know, there's a lot of regulations around, you know, you have to give your teams 2 weeks look ahead on a schedule. Well, in this pandemic, that's almost impossible and things are changing every single day. You know, the question is whether that is, you know, still being upheld and what these businesses are supposed to do as a result of that. And then this one, we've been, I think, successful at the national level, depending on which bill, you know, what version of the bill, the federal bill is going to come out. But, you know, the definition of a small business is also important. You know, I think we would all agree that, you know, what's perceived as larger restaurant groups, you know, each location is really its own business. So the question is whether you judge a small business based on the location or the holding company kind of changes what that is.
Right. I mean, that's a good point. So meaning like something like a group like Union Square Hospitality, who has a ton of restaurants, but each of them is operated sort of as a small independent business.
Yeah, and for the most part, they're capitalized independently. I mean, for the most part, each one is really kind of its own entity, even though it rolls up into one brand and one holding company. So, you know, we're really trying to, again, think multi-pronged for what will hopefully enable the vast majority of restaurants to be able to reopen and rehire, more importantly.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. It's all about getting to the other side of this. You can rehire. And if restaurants have, I mean, I think the biggest thing, you know, is the rent, because even in businesses like ours, where we can't operate our business and having walk-in traffic is such a huge part of our revenue, it's so like, I will never be able to make it up if we don't have some sort of forgiveness. And when I talk to my landlord, it's like, well, I still have to pay my mortgage, which you also understand. So it's, you know, it's just like there's no really good solutions right now. So where, tell me about like where you guys have made headway and how people can help support.
Well, I think first and foremost, we've definitely created a groundswell. I think that, you know, the biggest advice we got from lawmakers last week, I mean, as of Wednesday, just to give you some context, most businesses had closed around Sunday or Monday for the most part. Almost all had laid off, you know, 90%, if not more, at least of their hourly teams as of that weekend. So really, when we convened on Wednesday, no reports had come out about unemployment. No lawmakers seemed to have any clue that most restaurants had closed and laid off their teams across the country. So the first and foremost was really educating about what had been happening, what has happened, how structural that is. And I think also educating the magnitude of this industry. You know, I think it's really, I mean, I don't think it is the first time in history or as long as I can remember that independent restaurants have coalesced at all levels. And we did so quickly with a unified voice and very clear measures for what would take care of our people and what would provide solvency for these businesses to hopefully reopen on the other side of this. And you know, what we've been trying to do, like I said, is build a groundswell that can't be ignored. You know, chains were invited to Washington early on to be part of the relief package negotiations, you know, they are only one third of this segment. So we're amongst the largest employers in the nation next to the government, talking about 13 million people nationwide. Two thirds are owned by independent operators. So not including those, you know, structurally and legitimately, not including our segment as an industry that should be part of this relief package was a huge mistake. And so I think we've already gained a lot of traction, a lot of inclusion. And I think now it's very clear that it can't be ignored and what this poses, you know, across the country. I mean, this is the difference between a recession and a depression when you have the risk of structural unemployment at this scale.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And so you guys are focused on New York. Are you talking to other groups in other cities as well to have a unified voice there?
Yeah. So we're, like I said, we're working in tandem with the Independent Restaurant Coalition, which has a number of states across the country and regions represented. So we speak twice a day and fold back in into ROAR. So I'm a founding member of both.
You're founding member of both. Is IRC also a new, is that also a new coalition?
It was formed at the same time.
Formed at the same time. So now you have two other new full-time jobs besides figuring out what you're
I like to be busy as my team. No, I mean, it really came out of just seeing, you know, when I read, I mean, I think for me, the real tipping point was when I read that major chains were invited to the White House, to the Oval Office, to be part of the relief bill, and realizing what a disproportionate share of employment they represent, you know, it was a real wake-up call to say, you know what, we can't just be regulated on anymore. I mean, most people don't understand restaurants are one of the most heavily regulated industries. It's the reason, the irony here is that that's the reason that we don't have operating margin and cash to weather this kind of storm. So ironically, we're in this position because of government regulation, and yet we had been totally left out to dry and forced to fire our teams en masse. You know, it really was a dynamic, like I said, irony is kind of the kind word for it, but it just was not acceptable to me. And, you know, I think all of us saw that same paradigm and decided, you know, we're going to do something about it. And we're not just going to stay silent as we have before. And my hope is that that voice continues and, you know, we can do something to restructure the industry as a whole so that it isn't a single digit margin business anymore. Given again, you know, I don't know if you guys read, there's a really interesting article about how cruise lines pay less than 1% in corporate taxes and restaurants pay 20%. And then when you look at the level of employment, it's eclipsed. I mean, those kinds of dynamics, we have to wake up lawmakers and restructure this industry when we're on the other side of this. You know, this is...
I think the big problem is that, like you said, and like conversations we've had earlier, is that independent restaurants, restaurateurs and hospitality providers have not been organized in the sense that the big guys are. And hopefully what you're doing, what other people are doing now, leads to a better, you know, organization that brings everyone together. So there is that ability to fight together rather than as a bunch of individuals.
Exactly. Well, I think it's a wake up call for us. And I hope that it's a wake up call permanently, like I said, for government at all levels, city, state, and federal, to say, hey, you know what, this actually represents a massive amount of employment in our country, with real career opportunities and mobility. I mean, you know, anyone who knows, you know, myself and what we're doing at Westbourne, you know, this is a real gateway into a real middle class and critical, I think, towards upward mobility in our country. And, you know, I think it's time that everyone wakes up and, you know, stops treating it like, oh, the mom and pop, the independents, it doesn't really matter. I think what we're seeing for the first time is that it matters in a big way.
It does. I mean, the restaurant industry is famous for that. It's like you can come in and start as a dishwasher and become a manager very, you know, within a few years pretty easily if you, you know, go through the ranks. And again, that's your gateway into the middle class and really, you know, supporting a family and contributing. So I think it's great. So it sounds like you're planning to continue this coalition and everything after this crisis is over to have a more organized voice, which I think is going to be super beneficial for everybody. Hope so. Anything else you want to share? Any other ways people can get involved and make their voices heard?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Dan Kluger posted something this week that I thought was super powerful. I mean, food and dining out and restaurants is universal. It's a core part of the American fabric. If you've ever dined in a restaurant, worked at a restaurant, liked a restaurant, asked a chef for a favor, you know, begged a friend for a reservation, celebrated a momentous occasion in a restaurant, this is not the time to be silent. This is the time to, in turn, take care of this industry that has lived to take care of you. You know, someone said yesterday, and I thought it was, again, powerful, we're not asking for a bailout. A bailout is for businesses that make bad decisions. We're asking to please stay in business and rehire our teams. So for us, it's really about getting back to work and rehiring people. And I think, you know, anyone who has a platform, anyone who has any connections in government, this is the time to hear our voices. All of our points and talking points and the situation is very clearly outlined on our change.org page. This is the time. This is the time not to be silent. This is the time to band together. And this is the time to make the voice so loud that we can't be ignored any longer. Our people need you. And again, really, as an American, this should matter to you. It will affect you across the board. So really, we need everyone to join the conversation, to join the fight. Spread our hashtag roar, hashtag too small to fail. And, you know, regardless of whether you're in New York or national, join up with Roar, join up with IRC, www.saverestaurants.co. Again, this is the time to really repost something, use your platforms, use your followers, use your influence, call your representatives. Again, any leverage that you have in this situation, we need to do so while there's still time and the clock is really ticking. And follow up, we will, as I said, be launching a capital campaign shortly. So when we're ready with that, obviously we hope that those that want to give back in a monetary way also will have a vehicle to do so.
Yeah, that's amazing. Those are all good things to do. I know I've been saying every day, it's like, call your representatives, and I have been calling and it does help, you know, at least just to make sure that your voice is heard and to put the bug in people's ear. And this is the time not to be shy and social. Thank you so much. Al, anything else from your side? Any other questions?
That's it.
Well, thank you for all you do and for, you know, always being a leader in the industry and, you know, speaking up for so many independent operators. And let us know how we can support. We're so here for the t-shirt, you know, to make any kind of merch to help people, you know, give something and feel like they get something in return. So yeah, we'll definitely should talk about that too.
Well, we so appreciate it, as I said, so thank you. And really, we are all in it together, and hopefully we can make a lasting impact.
For sure. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, it's like all businesses who are small and independent are experiencing the same thing. So, and not just the restaurants, but the entire ecosystem, like the farmers and the vendors and the purveyors who support that system, are also feeling this hurt in the same exact ways. So it is, you know, voices together are stronger than just alone. So it's really important at this time.
100%.
So Camilla, tell us where we can follow all these efforts on social.
So at roar.ny and then at INDP restaurants is for the IRC as well.
And what are the hashtags that you guys are using so that people can know what to put on their posts?
Hashtag roar and hashtag too small to fail.
All right. Well, thank you so much to all of our guests. And I think the bright side of this whole epidemic and this whole crisis is actually people really organizing and coming together in a time of crisis. So thank you to all the people who have been sharing their voices, who have been organizing and making, you know, initiatives for the better and for change.
And I think, Jen, we had talked about that the next episode or next two episodes, we're going to lighten it up a bit and try and everything has been so heavy and interesting. And like you said, changing day by day. And, you know, we've gone from, you know, shock last week to activism this week. And I think we want to take, you know, reopening soon to a little bit lighter scale next week. And so we're going to be talking with chefs about how they're sort of, you know, what they're doing on a day-to-day now that they're not actively in the kitchen, standing over a trash can to eat, doing those kind of things, and how they've sort of modified their life while they're going through quarantine.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You could also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.